Welcome to the Battery Technology Podcast with me, Ken Davis.
Sponsored by Munters, experts in climate control systems for safe, high-quality battery cell production and R&D, delivering stable, low dew point conditions whilst minimising energy use.
Episode 19, Exploring Advances in Graphite Technology. One of the critical materials in any lithium-ion battery is graphite. It's been a key, indeed dominant, anode material since the birth of lithium-ion battery technology. So it's about time we took a proper deep dive into graphite. And there's no better business to talk about graphite than Epsilon Advanced Materials, a global battery material solutions company, but with very considerable interests in graphite. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Vikram Handa, founder and MD of Epsilon Group, and Sunid Kapoor, CEO of Epsilon Advanced Materials, to take me through just how graphite is such a fundamental material to the advancement of the EV ecosystem globally.
Firstly, a very, very warm welcome to the Battery Technology Podcast, Vikram and Sunit.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you for having us.
Vikram, if we can just start with the basics, really. So let's define what graphite is, what its role in batteries is, and what are the chemical properties of graphite that lend themselves so well to the use in battery technology?
Thank you, Ken. You know, I think graphite is one of the most important materials in a cell. It's agnostic to all kinds of chemistries as well. So it's about 25% of the cell by volume and 15% by value. And it's one of those materials that's always going to be a constant across cell technologies as cell technologies evolve as well. We as a company saw the opportunity that here lies a material which not many people are looking at. And it was a forward integration for our business. And that's how we looked at really looking into graphite and started this company about 6 years ago.
So do I understand, therefore, that your involvement with materials was long before your involvement, if you like, in the battery industry? So if you could just talk us through how that evolution took place.
Yeah, sure. So we started off as a coal chemical company. You know, we were a coal tar distillation company that I founded in 2011, the parent company Epsilon Carbon. And we were producing a product called pitch, which goes into the aluminium industry. We developed our own technology to convert this pitch into something called bulk mesocoke, which is really the base material to create graphite for lithium-ion batteries. So about 2019, we were producing coke. We were selling this coke to other anode makers, mainly in China. And we decided to go further downstream of the value chain and convert our own coke into synthetic graphite material. So this is the journey we've been on the last 5 years. I think being in the parent business, we were able to completely backward integrate to our raw material, and we make a very important component, which is also the coating that goes on synthetic graphite, which is important for cell performance as well. So I think the journey has been very interesting to keep going downstream as much as we can and kind of create an ecosystem where you are very self-sufficient from a supply chain point of view.
Sunit, going back to my chemistry days, now graphite comes in two forms. There's natural graphite, there's synthetic graphite. So it might be a good idea for us just to understand what the differences between those two things are, and maybe the similarities, and maybe perhaps some of the advantages that synthetic graphite has over its natural counterpart.
So as you said, I think from your school days, the natural graphite definitely comes as a graphite flake. It comes from mining. And obviously, I mean, finding those mining opportunities become difficult. But coming on the synthetic graphite, we explained just now, Vikram spoke about the bulk mesocoke, which we developed indigenously, backward integrating ourselves with our steel plant, and then steel plant getting forward integrated into our carbon plant, and then carbon plant forward integrated with our Epsilon Advanced Material and wood manufacturing plant. So that's one way of synthetic material. And then you have needle coke, which comes from refineries, which comes from a petroleum base. So these are the precursors which go into the into the anode material. The benefit of synthetic, A, from a performance standpoint and life cycle standpoint, it stands much better than the natural graphite. And as the cycle is growing now, the overall world's market has, 3 years ago, it was 65-70% natural and 30 to 35% synthetic, which was used. Today, across the globe, it is more 65-70% synthetic graphite and 30% natural. So it's more towards the synthetic graphite. There's also a combination here with the LFP or LMFP technologies. Synthetic graphite goes much better with the LMFP technology versus the natural graphite. So that is also, as the NMC is now moving more towards, NMC is still there and NMC 811 is coming, which is very expensive. But at the same time, as the world is moving more towards the LFP technology, this is also getting complemented more with the synthetic graphite technology.
So that shift in demand profile towards synthetic graphite away from natural graphite, is that purely being driven by resonance, if you like, with LFP, that it works with LFP well? Or is there anything else driving that?
It is definitely the combination of LFP or LMFP technology, but it is also the performance, the life cycle, which I mentioned to you. It's the life cycle is better on synthetic graphite, and that's driving the change.
Interesting. One of the things I just want to touch on there before we move on is, sounds like your process to manufacture synthetic graphite is using byproducts of another process. Do I understand that correctly?
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. Like it was said, we get a byproduct from steel industry, which we are processing it in our parent business, which is our Epsilon Carbon plant. We are creating a special quality pitch there through distillation. And then the special quality pitch is then getting converted into a bulk mass of coke, which is becoming our precursor for our synthetic graphite or active anode material. We also have some backward integration. When we process the material, we get a specialty oil out of it. The oil goes back into our parent business. So I think I would want to kind of add to that. This circularity also helps us in our life cycle assessment in the business, that we are using all our byproduct back in the business. So there is zero discharge from our company. And then at the same time, the hot gases or the gases which we generate in our manufacturing process, we are converting it into electricity. So we are generating our own power also in the manufacturing unit. So our life cycle assessment today, when compared to a similar plant in a country which is, heavily concentrated on graphite, is 78% below that country. I can talk about the country China, but we are 78% below in our life cycle assessment or our carbon footprint versus a similar plant in China.
Fascinating. Just Vikram, if I may ask in a little bit more detail about the manufacturing process that's involved in the creation of synthetic graphite. I think our listeners would be interested into digging into that a little deeper. Can you talk me through the steps in that particular process? And maybe also, if you can, if it's not commercially sensitive, maybe talk about some of the additives or additional elements you may be using to ensure that the characteristics of the product you finish up with is of particular use.
So if you look at the base material that starts off is always either coke for synthetic graphite or flake graphite for natural graphite. On natural graphite, to produce natural graphite anode material, you can go the thermal process like we do, or a chemical leaching process, which is also very popular. We are focused more on the thermal process. If you look at synthetic graphite, you can start with a petroleum coke, which can be either green or calcined, and or a product like ours, which is the bulk mass of coke. So you take the coke, you take out the moisture, you're shaping it, you're milling it. You basically take it down to anywhere from 8 to 20 micron size. Then you calcine it, you graphitize it. There's some other steps in the middle that are very proprietary to to giving certain unique characterizations to the finished product. And then at the end, you coat the product again. So most of the journey is actually mechanical, if you think about it. The technology lies in the coke and the shaping milling technology and the last step of the coating, right? In our case, the coating is also manufactured by us from the parent company. The coke is also manufactured by us. So if you look at whether other anode players globally, even tier one anode makers today that are huge, they buy coke from various sources and they blend it and have their own recipe. We are able to create our own coke depending on the end application. And believe it or not, a lot of the final, say, performance of a cell or an EV all starts with what is the coke? But that's where everything gets defined. And that's our unique advantage to be able to manufacture our own coke. So the process sounds simple, but there's a lot of technology that goes into in the middle to eventually make what is needed in a cell to give that performance to an EV or other applications as well. But making synthetic graphite is a very power intensive process. So you have to be very responsible in how you make it. Going back to what Sunit was saying as well. So using a 90% renewable power like we are planning to use helps you reduce the carbon footprint of what you're going to make.
And now a word from a sponsor.
Researching solid state. Partner with Visala, the most trustworthy measurement provider for reliable results and safe experiments, and prepare future developments with the best-in-class humidity and dew point probes. Contact us at visala.com/battery.
I'm interested in the market for graphite, the global market for graphite. Is it a globally traded commodity? How is the pricing determined? What are the demand-supply mechanics going on? Does the pricing and supply work in a different way?
First, I'll have to correct it. It is not a commodity because there's high technology involved. I think we already talked about a lot of proprietary steps and a lot of proprietary processes which are part of it. And it is a highly performance product. I mean, like I mentioned before, your life cycle is important, your discharge capacity is important, your fast charging is important. And all of this is driven by the battery materials which are getting into the battery cell. I mean, of course, the chemistry of the battery cell matters or electrode matters, but this is the anode material or the cathode material is driving the performance in the battery cell. So it is a highly technological product, point one. From a demand standpoint, there is a high imbalance. There is a large supply available out of one country, which is China. And then outside China, there is no to very little supply chain which has been established. There are a few companies who are trying to work through and who are trying to get their material qualified and setting up units globally. But on the ground, there is very little today from a commercial scale production point of view on graphite. So I think to talk about the demand, we talk about the global volumes in probably 5 years or 7 years from now will be in the neighborhood of 20 million tons of anode material which will be required, or graphite anode material which will be required. And the capacity today, 94% of the capacity for the current requirement resides in China. What we forecast going forward is that it will be still 80 to 85% in China and 20% will get established outside. So for a 20 million ton requirement, you would assume that there will be a 4 million ton which will be outside China. And Epsilon today is what we have announced today is to set up a 200,000 ton capacity globally. And then we are already looking at working on increasing our capacities from 200,000 ton. But as of now, what we have announced is 200,000 out of that 4 million ton requirement. So there is still a huge gap in the market, and there will be a lot of players which will have, I think, scope to grow in this market.
It raises another point in the sense of clearly, as with many critical battery materials, there's a geopolitical angle to particularly the supply side. But in graphite, it's even more of an issue because, of course, China announced last year that there were going to be some restrictions in the export of graphite from China, which makes a bad situation even worse. Yes. So I'm interested, and it's a good segue maybe into talking about your own or Epsilon's strategy of international expansion. I know from the research I've done for this podcast that you're developing assets in different countries, and it would be a good opportunity, I think, just to talk that through in terms of what drove that thought process strategically to develop those operations around the world, because you're a global business, but I'm just interested in what drove those specific decisions to site your operations where you do.
I think first we talk about the ban from China. I mean, I think there has been this geopolitical tension, and there has been talks about, how the environmental governance in China is abused somewhat. And there have been back and forth between different countries stating that, okay, like I mentioned about the carbon footprint in China, how they are disposing the chemicals, it is all has been in a question mark for a long, long time. At the same time, the reliance of every country on one country, because it's 94% getting produced or processed in just China. China declaring a ban will bring the country to a halt in EV production. Any country, it's not just US, it's any country where they're exporting material. And China also, announced the ban on the material, which was high performing material, which would go into the high performance electric vehicles. So they announced the ban on those vehicles. So this definitely creates some political instability also from a country point of view, because it becomes a national security issue where you are so dependent on one country or one source. It is like you're running your own business, but you are dependent on one source to supply everything to you. And if that source collapses, you are gone. So it's a similar thing, which was, I think, felt amongst the customers, that we are so dependent that if one country decides not to export material, we will come to our knees and we will be stopping our production. So that drove a lot of, uncertainty within the market. And then I think market has already seen during COVID times that how fragile is our supply chain when we are getting parts from China or even from countries which are, where you have 45 days or 60 days cycle to get material into West. So that obviously drove some of the decision for the customers to go forward. Now, we had started much before China declared this ban. We are setting up this global company, and thanks for doing the research on us. So we are setting up plants in three continents. First one is definitely in our home ground in India. We are headquartered in Mumbai, and we are setting up a plant in Vijayanagar, Karnataka, here in India, which will be a 30,000 ton plant to start with, and we will scale it up to 100,000 tons. The second one is in North Carolina, where we are going through the permitting stage, and we'll start construction very, very soon there in North Carolina. And we will again start with 30,000 and then scale it up to 60,000 tons. And the third plant will come in Finland, which will be a year later. That is to serve our European market, and that will also start with 30,000 tons, and we'll scale it up to 50 to 60,000 tons later on. So when we started setting up these plants, our primary goal is clearly to be close to our customers. We're setting up this global company, and we are dealing with global customers, and we want to be close to our customer manufacturing footprint. That's point one. At the same time, the market, the ecosystem got all developed in one country where we have 94% processing. So obviously there is an ask from our side, going back to the governments where we want to operate, whether it's India or it's US or Europe, where we plan to operate, that the bilateral policies or the policies from that government has to support the local manufacturing. For us to do local manufacturing there, it has to support the local manufacturing. So IRA is one in the US, which is a big accelerator to set up the local supply chain in the US. And we will get benefited out of it, because that will accelerate the I mean, the need for the OEMs to go local in the US to get the IRA benefit to their end customer, which is a big benefit. And I think other countries somewhat have to follow the same suit. It's not a direct benefit to us as a supplier, but it is the benefit which is going to the end customer, and it is driving the localization in the country to go away from the reliance on one country.
Can I just ask an additional point to that in terms of maybe the role of things like critical materials agreements politically? Do issues like that have a role to play in reducing the reliance of the world, really, on one particular economy to supply all its raw materials?
Yeah, so definitely. I think Europe started off by trying to draft some policies for localization. But the US Inflation Reduction Act has been, a game changer for the whole supply chain and brought a lot of focus to develop the supply chain in the US. The kind of funding the US government is willing to put behind it is really game changing, right? So there's a pro and a con to that, because they would like localization, they're willing to subsidize you. But if you look at a customer, they're willing to subsidize you to build the facilities and bring manufacturing back to the US. But if you look at the customers, everybody has pricing pressure, right? So if you have a product that's $100 in China at a very large scale, can you make the same product at $100 and sell it at $100 in the US? It might be challenging because your CapEx per ton is a lot, your operating costs are higher, you maybe don't have the whole ecosystem like you have it developed there. So definitely the IRA helps subsidizing some of these projects, but customers want it to be attractive. So I think the US has taken a look, okay, you can also source it from a lot of free trade agreement countries. And that's where countries like Australia or Canada also benefit. But I think it needs to be looked at, what are the really strategic countries that can help? Because it's not only access to nickel or lithium or cobalt, it's also the processing industry, right? What we are doing, the anode and the cathode, it's a high capex industry, a lot of environmental controls, a lot of good green energy needed as well. So I personally believe that there's an opportunity for even a country like India to be a strategic partner to the US, potentially get into a critical minerals agreement with the US, where a lot of the processing industry can be developed in India. The minerals could come from Africa, could come from Argentina, could come from Indonesia, but we could be very attractive from a cost point of view to provide these into the US market and help them build this supply chain somewhere else in the world and be competitive still. So I think that's a way to look at it. And I think the US government is evaluating all options, whether it's Europe, whether it's Indonesia, where they think they want to kind of get into these strategic agreements, bilateral agreements. But I think that's needed, really, this industry to grow. It's tough to grow unless you have a lot more strategic partners who are aligned in your vision.
That makes a lot of sense. Just before we move on, just want to get a feel for where you are in terms of the development of your market with your customers, in terms of kind of the any offtake agreements that you've got in place with big companies. Again, you may not be able to talk about those things specifically, but I'm interested to know to what degree you've been able to make a success already of your relationships in that market in terms of your supply agreements.
I just want to take you back maybe 3 years of how we started this journey, right? We start discussing with customers, look, here's what we manufacture. It's our own coke, it's synthetic graphite. We give them a product that's an off-the-shelf product, what we call. They take it, they make cells, they test it, they come back. They say, hey, can you change this? Can you change that? We go back, change the coke, do the whole steps again. So what we call the first step, which is a kg or two, is an A sample. That takes about 5 to 6 months to really go back and forth. Then you have a B sample, so now he knows what he wants. You got to make as per his specifications. So again, this is a performance technology driven product. So it's not an off-the-shelf product, because every customer's cell chemistry is different. And he expects you to adapt to him. He's not going to adapt to you. So this is where you go back and customize, and you manufacture a sample B. And once you manufacture sample B, which is anywhere from 5 to 20 kgs. Then he goes into sample C, which is now you're looking for commercial production. You have to prove that you're commercially able to produce this. This is where they do an audit and a PPAP. And this is where we are today. We have built our customer qualification plan, and we are in talks with customers. I'll let Sunit tell you a little bit more about really where we are, the next steps.
Yeah, no, I think Vikram already covered it. It's been a long journey, and it's been quite an evolving journey as the technological requirement also continued to evolve in the EV market. And we went through that that long journey, but a rewarding journey with the world's few largest cell manufacturers. So we've been engaged with almost everybody who's in this cell manufacturing, but we are qualified with few of the largest cell manufacturers in the world today. And so that's from our qualification standpoint. And from an offtake agreement standpoint, obviously we cannot talk about the customer today as we have not gone public on it. But we will be, in the next few weeks, we'll be coming up with a large offtake agreement, which will be one of the largest offtake agreement, which would have been announced in the past few years outside China. So we would be coming up very, very soon with that announcement.
Oh, congratulations on that. One thing before we conclude the conversation, which has been a very thought-provoking and interesting conversation, so I'm very grateful for that. I've always associated you with anode materials, graphite particularly. But of course, fairly recently, you announced a diversion into cathode materials in the sense of you bought the Johnson Matthey facility in Germany. And I just wondered if it would be remiss of me perhaps not just to mention that. So what was the strategic thinking about moving into the cathode materials market with such a dominant position you have in the graphite anode side?
Yeah, Ken, so like we started, you know, our strategy has really been how to take waste, in this case, from a steel plant and convert it into graphite anode material for a really big industry. And we looked at the same way of, there's a lot of iron waste streams coming out of a steel plant, and how can we really convert that into LFP? And that was really the journey about a year ago that we conceptualized. And then we were looking for good technologies. We've gone down this 5-year journey of scaling up our own anode technology, but we wanted access to great LFP technology, which mainly is, again, focused in China, but we want to obviously develop something ex-China. Our acquisition of this facility in Moosburg brings us a great product portfolio, close to 150 patents, a very strong R&D team, and a pilot plant. So we are able to produce sample A and B at this facility, what I was mentioning earlier. And we are now in discussions with customers again, revalidating what we had a couple of years ago. And our goal is to follow the similar footsteps. We are going to build a large 100,000 ton LFP facility in India. It means we have an aggressive timeline because we have a mature technology over here. So we think we can hopefully break ground next year on building this facility. Again, the market is going to be similar customers today who are our anode customers. We would be approaching them again for qualifying our LFP material and supply to them. Right now, our focus is to build it in India, but we're having initial discussions to follow our anode footstep and, you know, go outside India as well. But right now, our focus is the first facility to build in India. So that's where we transition. And again, making the anode and cathode gives us a lot of understanding of what customers need, how to, again, customize these materials for them. And I think customers will appreciate that value that we can bring to them and bring large scale volumes to them, because I think that's the need of the hour in the next couple of years. Who can really industrialize and who can give these big volumes to them?
Well, that's been an absolutely fascinating introduction to the graphite market, and particularly the work that you guys are doing at Epsilon, fundamentally changing the dynamic of that market. So I very much thank you both, Vikram, Sunit, for your fascinating insights really into the graphite market. We will continue, and all my listeners will as well, continue to watch your progress with great interest. It sounds like you're going to have your hands full over the course of the next few years.
Yeah, we have no dearth of excitement for the next few years at least.
Sunit, Vikram, thank you so much for joining me on the Battery Technology Podcast.
Thank you so much for having us, Ken. It was a pleasure.
The Battery Technology Podcast is a copyrighted GSE Media Limited production. For more details on how to reach us, you'll find our contact details in the show notes or at our website, www.batterytechnologypodcast.com.